You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show.
Mad Men.
Being is for doing. We are doing the Mad Men After Buzz After Show. I'm Joe Braswell. Happy Father's Day to all you fathers, especially you, Joe Sanfilippo.
And happy Father's Day to you, Mr. Braswell.
I'll take that. Thank you very much. I'm joined here by Joe Sanfilippo and Catherine Tulich.
Hello.
Glad to have you back.
Thank you.
And Matt Lieberman, glad to have him back.
And yeah, Matt Lieberman, glad to have you back too. Yeah. I was kidding you.
How'd you guys go last week without us?
We went.
Just long and slow, man. Long and slow.
Long and slow. Just like, I like my coffee.
I love it. There's nothing good to say here.
We did it. But we're doing it now. All four of us back. We're all back in town. I was in New York for a week, and you were somewhere, and then you had a comedy show.
I had a show, yeah.
And then you're...
I don't remember. But whatever it was very important.
But we're here, episode 12, the penultimate episode of Mad Men.
Ooh.
The quality of mercy.
The quality of mercy. Great season. I love this season. And it really sort of like it feels in some ways very uneventful. In some ways, if I look back, like nothing really happened except for maybe last week. But, you know, it's a good season nonetheless.
Yeah. Definitely, you know, there's movement on the business side. Everyone's been given the chance to evolve a little bit or to affect each other in new ways.
Right.
You know, for every way that Don has kind of regressed in some of his behavior, you know, especially with what happened last week with Sally, he's affecting the people in his life in new and more negative ways than he was before.
I mean, I think that's always the pace of Mad Men, though. In some ways, it feels like nothing happens, and then you just get these explosive moments, which is, you know, like last week, I think we had, like, two explosive moments with Sally and with Bob Benson. So that's what I think I love about the show is the fact that, yeah, in many ways, it does seem like, well, what happened? Hang on.
Well, we started with an explosive moment this week when Ken got shot in the face.
Yeah.
That was really explosive, literally.
Yeah, Chevy Dick Cheney Ken, that was rough, man.
I called it. I'm like, Dick Cheney.
And boom.
And there he was, and I thought he was dead.
I'm getting a feeling Matthew Weiner really hates car companies. Yeah. boy, he paints some.
He's making those Detroit guys look like a bunch of meatheads.
Yeah,
not
so
kidding.
I don't know the reasoning behind that.
And it was awesome too, because after they shoot him in the face, they're like, "Oh shit!"
Yeah,
not like, "Oh my god, let me help you." More like, "Oh shit." What do you say? They tried to stop for lunch?
Oh, man, this is going to ruin the whole day.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, we broke it. We're going to have to get a new one.
Right? We have to get a new toy.
Yeah. He's like their toy. Yeah. He literally is. Yeah.
Poor Cosgrove. He's not having it.
You imagine being so mad at a group of people that you're willing to walk away from that kind of money?
Well, you have to get shot in the face.
Yes.
But even that, getting shot in the face might do it.
And that's after they forced him to crash a car and ruined his leg.
Oh, that's right, leg.
Yeah, he needs to quit Chevy before there's nothing left of him.
He's going to be a father. He's got to be careful.
What are you talking about, Flippo? You're like, can you imagine having to do that?
I guess.
Can you imagine actually having to quit?
No. I guess the question is
what would it take for you?
There's so much money involved. I don't know, it'd be tough. But I guess. I forgot about the car crash a little bit there.
Well, Pete and Ben need to be careful or they're going to be, you know, broken men.
Yeah. I don't know if Chevy's going to want to party with them as much. I think it's going to be, I don't know if they're going to want to party with Pete.
He's not as fun.
No. I mean, do you want to party with Pete?
You want to party with Pete if he's paying for the party.
Well, but Cosgrove's no freaking, you know, he's no...
Yeah.
George Clooney.
You see that boy tap dance? That man can tap dance.
Yeah, but he's above it all, though. He's kind of milquetoast. Right. He doesn't care for that kind of stuff. He's happily married. He loves literature. He loves his writing. You know, at the end of the day, he just wants to go home and have a nice tea, probably.
Yeah. In one piece.
Yeah. Write some science fiction under a pseudonym that no one knows about.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. He doesn't care for the whoring and the shooting and the drinking and all that stuff. That's just his job.
And ultimately, I don't think he cares about the money in terms of, I don't think that's an incentive for him. He's a creative person. He wants to write. He wants to write books and things. Yeah. I don't think it's about
And he's about to be a father.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we see, so... That was what it was. We had more answers with Bob Benson, which we'll get to.
Yes.
We had a little more reveal with Don. A lot of interesting Don unraveling here. Mm-hmm. Unraveling. Yeah, unraveling.
Unraveling and coming back together.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. And sort of coming back together in a very Don way. We had a definite Peggy Chaw better understanding what their relationship is going on. And we had some Sally. A lot more Sally. Yeah. I got to say, Sally scares me. Every time she appears on the screen, there's something about... You know, when Sally's on the screen, that I get filled with this feeling of dread.
Do you remember that movie called The Bad Seed? Sometimes she reminds me of the girl in The Bad Seed. So that sort of sweet.
Maureen, what's her name? Look at you pulling Bad Seed.
Yeah. But no, Kiernan Shipka has like this kind of like sad, quiet, like vulnerability to her, and this sort of this feeling of innocence continually lost.
Well, it's just something about...
But there's something very conniving behind all that.
But there's something about
I mean, conniving's not the right word, but I mean, there's this manipulation behind her, too, that she manipulates people around when she can.
Yeah, when she got Glenn to beat up Rolo, you saw the look, the smirk of satisfaction on her face.
Well, it's a very Betty Draper, Draper moment.
I don't think she started... I think it was a discovery on her part. I don't get the vibe that she started that fight because she wanted to see what happened. I got the vibe she started the fight because she was pissed.
Yeah, right.
Of course. But then in the middle of the fight, she's like, this is awesome.
Right.
I can make these guys do things.
That's what I mean by it was a very Betty Draper moment in that she's like, oh, yeah, like, this is the seeds of manipulation.
It was a moment of... Yeah. She was discovering her inner Bettiness.
Yes.
Yeah,
her potential to Betty, if we can turn Bettying into a verb.
Right. What I was saying, though, earlier about Sally is that I'm filled with these feelings of dread every time she comes on the scene on the screen. Something about, you know, when she's on the screen, the way they play it out, I mean, I feel like something bad is going to happen to her.
Well,
I don't know what this is. It's like, I don't know if it's the relationship with Don. I have this literally like something bad is going to happen to her. Even today, I'm like, is she going to overdose? Is she going to, like, what's going to happen?
Maybe in about 10 years' time.
Oh, my God.
Well, I have a question, Joe. Have you always felt this way, or have you felt this way since the Grandma Ida incident?
I think I've always felt this way. I think I felt this way because I feel it's something about the relationship.
Because that was very scary.
Oh, no, of course. But that's a perfect example of, like, that was a direct, like, okay, she's in jeopardy. But I think it's something about the relationship between Don and his kids, specifically Don and Sally, who, like, she seems to be the only one who gets him and understands him. But when they're together or in a close proximity, I just get this feeling that there's a disconnect there that allows Sally... I don't know what it is. Like, she's, like, not under the protection of her father.
Well, she's not under the protection of anybody because all of the adults on this show are very, very selfish.
Right.
No one's watching out for these kids.
Well, exactly. So when I see Sally alone doing stuff by herself, like discovering things, she's really smart... I'm like, what's she going
to
do?
Oh, yeah, like when she and Glenn went to the museum last season.
Everything. Like, exactly. It's a perfect example. I'm like, what's going to happen to Sally?
But then also she played Megan and her mother off, too, was it last season?
Yeah.
I mean, she's done some, she's done.
She's pushing boundaries, but, like, we've watched her grow up, and I think that's part of what makes us so anxious when we watch her is, you know, like, we've seen her on this show now. You know, for 6 years, she started on the show when she was 7 or 8 years old, probably in the pilot, you know, 7 years old or even younger. And, like, to watch her grow up and face a world that is continually more dangerous and confusing and the laws and social rules are continually breaking down.
Maybe it's from the moment when she had the cleaning bag over her head and they're playing Spaceman.
Exactly.
Maybe that was the moment I thought, oh, no!
Right. But that is, you know, small potatoes compared to... I got really, really scared when the girls are like, oh, you're not allowed to talk anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, what kind of sick, twisted shit are these girls going to get up to?
Sally kind of turned that around.
This is my... We'll get to Sally later. I don't want to step on our Sallys here. But I just say, I was filled with dread again when I saw Sally. Mm-hmm. For whatever, we'll get to Sally in a second. But go ahead, Joe.
What do you want I think that we're overblowing the Sally thing. I think Sally's doing nothing new under the sun. Nothing particularly unique about her situation. It's just different from maybe the way we grew up. I mean, but when I was 14, I sure as hell got drunk.
Speak for yourself.
That explains so much.
Yes. I haven't stopped, and it's been a wonderful ride. The seven of you look wonderful tonight. But I remember we smoked cigarettes, we drank, we went and did, and hope my children never see this, but we went and did all kinds of stupid shit, but we did different stupid shit than what Sally's doing. So I think, you know, for me, at least growing up on the West Coast, her stuff seems a little bit darker and different.
It just seems
it's like a different level of a different kind of stuff, but it's the same kind of, I mean, the same family of stupid.
I'm not saying that what she's doing is so scary or unique, or I agree with you. Like, I think everything she's doing is total preteen, teenager stuff. I'm just saying generally from a cinematic standpoint, from a storytelling standpoint, from a directorial standpoint, when Sally hits the screen, for me, I get scared.
I think it's her grill. I think it's something about the stillness of her face makes you, I think it invites you as the viewer to put something on it, and maybe we go scary because we're waiting for something to happen. But I think that's TV watcher training. I don't know if that's
but it's because almost every time that she has a story, it ends badly for her.
Right.
Yeah. No matter what it is, it either ends badly or she just loses a little bit of that innocence that she had so much of when the series started. It's a gradual, you know, like waves washing over a rock until there's nothing left. And last week, we got a big old wave.
Sure.
And I don't think it's ever going to stop.
No.
And part of, well, I will say this for Sally, because
there's a lot to discuss.
So, but let's jump into the episode itself. So one of the main, you know, the cog of this episode, the main, you know, cornerstone of this episode is Don. Don, we open with Don, so the aftermath of what we saw last week, which is that horrifying reveal of Sally catching him in the act. You know, which Joe and I discussed at length last week. But this week, Don's still not handling it well. We talk about it,
and we couldn't figure out the time space.
Well, it's usually a month. It's usually a month between episodes. That's what they say.
But
he
started out like we thought almost it was the next morning. But he'd been in that state for a while.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's a long time. And he's hair of the dog in it. He's got the vodka and the orange juice. He's disheveled. He doesn't give a crap.
He's sleeping in his daughter's bed.
Yes.
Yeah. It's so wild to me to watch this stuff. Like, you know, right now, because I don't drink and I don't smoke, if my kid drank and smoked...
Only when you're 14.
Only when you're 14.
Only when I was 14.
Right.
If my kid drank and smoked, I would smell it on her like she had walked into the car with a red siren flying over her head.
Right.
But it's such an interesting thing that Sally can get in the car and Betty doesn't even bat an eyelash. That she must stink of booze and cigarettes. Don, every morning, is drinking orange juice and sneaking vodka into it, but Megan's not even questioning it. It's interesting to me.
But it's that era, too. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
There's so much of that going on that no one even notices that someone's drinking in the morning.
I was horrified when Sally, I mean, went further, but lit a cigarette for her mother. I'm thinking, but that probably every kid then did do it. They didn't think twice about it. Yeah.
First of all, Sally had plenty of time to take a shower. It's an overnight. Sally had time to clean up. It wasn't like she picked her up at midnight. Second of all, the Megan, not to just shit on your comments there, but I'm saying the Megan thing.
Shit on my comment.
The Megan thing is Megan's well aware that Don is drinking. This isn't like Megan's well aware. Like, she's always like, oh, had a rough night, or oh, you better, you know, clean up, or you need to stay home.
Or Don.
You know, so it's not like the surprise, like it's today, like, what are you doing drinking? It's friggin' 1968.
So you're saying he didn't fool Megan putting the vodka back in his jacket? That did not...
No, but I don't think he's hiding it. Like, Megan's aware.
Exactly.
Oh, he was hiding that one.
Yeah, he was. He was hiding that one because he has a whole bar on the other side of the room, but he's taking a little pocket bottle.
When does Don not have an alcoholic breath? I mean, does that guy go a day without drinking?
That's true. He could self-immolate like that.
But there are varying degrees of Don's, you know, drinking. There's the, like, he's holding it together pretty well, as we see as he's
drinking. Well, I mean, he would be an alcoholic by a long stretch in these.
Of course, well, they all would.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, but they were drinking every day.
Yeah, all of them except for Chaw would be an alcoholic by any
concern. You can kind of see, like, Don in this episode, in many ways, he's kind of like a spring that is kind of, it's lost its tension and then it slowly tightens back up.
Right.
You know, like, he takes this day off and he's drinking alone by himself. He finishes his little bottle halfway through the day when Megan gets home. And there was that little beat you guys noticed where he's watching Megan on her soap opera,
yeah.
And she's nailing her French twin character now. And she says, you know, what was it, like listen to me, or like, don't, like, pay attention to me. And then he shuts it off immediately, like, as she's saying that. It's kind of like, it's in a little bubble, their relationship.
And I just wanted to say, I just love to talk about that, the little drop in about the Nixon. I've never
seen
that. That was quite...
Vote like your life depended on it.
Right, that was where they did things.
Obviously, the scare tactics Nixon used
it was very much life or death in 1968.
Yeah.
So we see Don, he wakes up. He's there. He's having a rough time. But the what I want to talk about is the exchange he had with Betty when we found out.
Yeah.
That, you know, that was, to me, the most telling Don Draper moment, you know, in a while, in that, you know, Betty's sort of oblivious, obviously telling him, like, you know, oh, it concerns Sally. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, sits up, like, what about her? What happened?
Can I just say, there's so many moments this episode where people thinking they're, you know, about to say something.
Yeah.
And then it's
very
something
well
else.
Yeah.
Very well done.
There were so many
that.
Of those moments right. in this episode tonight, which were just extraordinary.
And which are great tricks to play on the audience. And I'm always...
This dread of... What are they going to say?
I'm never a fan of when the writing of the directing sort of manipulates the viewer, but they do it so well here.
Yeah.
It's just like we're so manipulated, but it was done so well. But in this instance, they have that phone call, they have that conversation, and once Don finds out it's about the boarding school, he's like, I mean, you know, I'll pay whatever it costs. I'll pay for it. Like that, it's almost a relief to him. Mm. But this speaks to the whole thing. Everything with Don is a transaction. You know, this is again some of my colleagues at Grant and I talk about this. But you know, Don, even all the way back to when he talked about Peggy, when he's like, you know, you're getting paid for it. You know,
yeah.
Everything Don, I don't know if it's the growing up in the whorehouse, but it's more and more you see everything with Don is like, I do this, you give me that. Even last week, even the whole notion of him. We didn't talk about this, Joe, but the whole notion of him doing the favor for the Rosen's son, like that was a transaction in itself. That was sort of like maybe him wanting to ingratiate himself to Sylvia. That was all. I mean, he kind of knew that maybe that was a way to get to her. That didn't occur to me until a week later because we just saw the episode. But like again, if you look back, everything with Don is like, I do this to get this. I'll pay whatever it is to get that. And even with his own daughter, like, okay, whatever it costs, I'm not for this. She doesn't want to come here, but whatever it costs, I'll pay for it. And then at the end, he still can't get himself to mutter the words to her, to relay it to her. Like,
yeah.
Tell Sally that Megan and I miss her. I mean, how hard is it to say?
Well,
like,
he couldn't even say
even directly.
He's playing a dangerous game though, because he doesn't want to open up the can of worms with Sally one way or the other. I mean, he's just terrified that Sally's going to say something. I mean, so much of that whole conversation was just total fear.
Yeah.
And I, you know, you got to think in his calculus, he's going, okay, well, tell her that Dad. It's better if it comes from Megan. Megan, we both miss you, but don't think too much about me, because if you think too much about me, it might make you angry enough to tell Mom what happened.
Sure.
So just think enough to realize that we miss. That's all, though.
Yeah. Well, you have to take into account. Remember his little soliloquy about realizing the day that he loved his son, that he had never really loved his kids, and then all of a sudden he realizes that he loves Bobby because he sees himself in him. You know, this is the first time that we really see him racked with feeling over Sally for anything. For like,
is he
really?
Really, or is he just in fear?
No, I think he really felt. I mean, he felt something. Yeah. He's sleeping in her bed, for crying out loud.
Exactly,
like, he's feeling something.
But part of it is also that he's afraid of that she'll reveal.
It's fear, but it's not just that she'll reveal it, but that he's screwed up his kid for life. That she'll never want a relationship with him. He realizes I messed up big time, and there's no going back from it.
I think that, but I don't know if it's. Do you really think that? What's motivating him?
I don't think that...
I think it's more like, oh my God, I got caught.
I think it's more complicated than that.
All right.
I think that he's realizing, you know, this has consequences. With people, with adults, they can fall in and out of your life. And he has had enough adults that he has abandoned or that have left him that he doesn't need to care about them. But his kids are forever.
But then to sort of be happy that she's going off to a boarding school, it's not like he didn't put any objection up to it. I mean, it's not like, you know, I'll pay for it.
Well, that's
yeah, but
guilt.
I mean, that's not
that's
sort of
guilt right there.
Yeah, but it's not like I want to try and try and get a better relationship with Sally. It's like, yeah, let her get locked away in a boarding school for the next few years, so I don't have to deal with her.
Well, that's it. Well, you don't have to deal with the, with being scared to death.
I don't think that's what it is at all. I think I need to give her whatever she wants so that not only will she not reveal it, that maybe she'll forgive me.
How about taking her off to a psychologist or something?
Oh, well, that's still taboo.
I know. No, but I'm just saying that. I don't know. In my mind, I felt like it was more like, yeah, let me just kind of do what she likes so I can don't have to deal with it. In a way,
I
felt like if he really wanted to help her, he would try and work through this with her. I don't know.
Sure. Well, let's for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't disagree. I think that my opinion on it is I think that he is feels a lot of guilt. He loves his daughter. He doesn't know how to express that love. He is feeling a lot of things that he doesn't know how to express. I think that this is why he turns to the drinking. He's effed up in the highest order. Like when that his world crashed in on him. Like I told Joe last week, seeing that whole operation at looking at Sally as him staring at his own morality through his daughter's eyes. You can't hide from everyone else. Everyone thinks Don Draper's the greatest guy in the world. Even in that living room scene, everyone's like, Don, you're the best. Oh, you did it, Don. And Sally's like, you disgust me.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is like, that's the only time, except for looking in a mirror, where he can look around the room and someone goes, you're full of shit. And it's his own daughter. And so that effed him up, and it's effed him up for the last month to where he's putting, you know, vodka in the orange juice, he's disheveled, he's going home sick. I think that the reason of that is A, he's never had that view of himself, you know, through his daughter's eyes, and B, he loves his daughter, he cares about his daughter. And so it's just screwed him up. But the question I have is, he snapped out of it. He seemed to snap out of it. He got himself, he pulled himself together, he became Don Draper again, he's off to the movies. With Megan, and you know how lovely is that Megan? That Megan's so lovely. Why is he cheating on her anyway? So, off to the movies with Megan, and he sees.
And it was Rosemary's Baby.
Rosemary's Babies, of course, which is scary as hell.
Yeah.
He sees the opportunity to. He sees Peggy and Shaw in the movies, right? And Rosemary's Baby, and then we all sort of see his wheels turning there. We don't know what's happening, but we see the looks. He's up to something.
Oh, we know what's happening.
Yeah,
We don't know what I mean by that is like we know that he sees this whole situation with Peggy and Shaw and is like, this is not, I don't approve of this. Is he jealous of this? Is he not approve of this? Is he looking at the opportunity to stick it to Shaw? How is he going to make this work to his advantage? We see he does call back Sunkissed, you know, and go for Sunkissed. And for me, I guess there was a moment last week where he thought, okay, well, this Shaw's a stand-up guy. This is not how I operate. But okay, if he wants to make this deal, I'll make this deal with him. When he got the call from
Harry,
Crane, he got the call from Crane. He's like, look, Harry, we can't do it no matter what. But I think the moment he saw Shaw with Peggy, he was like, this mother effer is like just like me. He's like the rest of us. He's not so high and mighty. If that's the case, I'm taking Sunkissed. And so that's how I interpreted it. I don't know. What do you think his motivation was?
Well, I always think with Peggy, he feels a little possessive with her. So he gets a little more, I think when things happen with Peggy, you know, not that they ever had a relationship, but he kind of feels a possessiveness about Peggy.
Well, was this more about Peggy or was this more about his thing with Shaw?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So in a way, I think part of it is he wanted to get back at, not sort of get back at Shaw, but also like to really kind of go, I know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Okay. I know what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. And I sort of feel it's a little bit of that. Because of the way he feels with Peggy, that he's in a way that, not she's his, but, you know, he was the one that guided her in the beginning and that. And I don't think, you know, he just didn't want to see this happen. So I felt the Sunkissed thing was a little bit, you know, it was a little bit also about that as well, not just, you know, this is good for business.
I think it was his ego on both counts.
Yeah.
You know, it's his ego when it comes to Peggy and the fact that he fostered her and that, you know, he gave her her shot and that, you know, she's pulling Don Draper moves now. And, you know, the fact that he kind of felt cowed by Ted's morality in last week's episode. And to see that he's not perfect, he's pushing back against it. He's showing Ted, you know, you're not so great. Because Peggy keeps reminding him, he's a good man and you just can't stand it. And he's like, he's not so good. He's just
not
in love
so virtuous.
With you. Yeah. He's not so virtuous. He's just in love with you.
And that was his moment. That, to me, was his moment when he thought, Chaz is above reproach. He's this virtuous guy, but when he saw him in the movie theater, he's like, this guy's not so virtuous. Yeah. He's just a regular effing guy.
Yeah, and therefore, he's fair game.
Right.
And I can do what I want, because I'm John Draper, damn it.
So we had that, so we had that moment. He took Sunkissed. He confronted Chaz with it. He knew exactly how to play it. He knew that, you know, both Roger Sterling and Cutler would be thrilled. So this moment where the accounts guy's like, great, $8 million. What's it, you know, what's it to say no to? But then he played it perfectly. He saw the whole budget thing happen, but then at the very end he pulled that stunt where he did a Don Draper and let everyone let the two of them know in the room.
They squirm.
Yeah.
And then flipped it around, which is just a testament to me on how Don really commands a room and really commands, like, his clients. I mean, the fact that he has the confidence to let that whole thing play out, let Ted sink, and then not only save it, but save it in a way where he calls them out and then still saves it.
Yeah.
That was just a brilliant, that was another brilliant Don Draper moment.
Well, so. It worked on every level for him because he got to reassert himself. He did, he's not wrong, though. He did save them because he's right, Ted was not seeing clearly, and the whole thing was going sideways. But the worst part about it is how Peggy was personally attached to it and how Peggy could see that Clio award, and it was Peggy's idea and it was Peggy's drive, and it's not Peggy's anymore, it's Frank Gleason's.
Yeah. Well, he was punishing
took it away.
Her.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just took it away from her and gave it to a dead guy.
A lot. He did a lot in that. Yeah, he did a lot in that one. But in that one boardroom scene, he saved the deal. He ingratiated himself with the client. He let Ted and Peggy know who's boss. Yeah. He also took it away from Peggy. Like, he did a lot with just one stroke of the Don Draper.
He was punishing her in many ways. Because if you go all the way back to the pilot, when she put her hand on his and she kind of made a move on him, and he was like, "Don't do that," you know, it's almost in a way, I taught you this lesson before. Don't screw around with the people at work. Don't screw around with your boss. You messed up. You didn't listen to me. Now you get punished, and you don't get your Clio, no matter how good the work is.
Well, speaking of good work,
yeah,
we've done some good work here at AfterBuzz.
Yes, that's true. So many of our listeners and viewers out there may know that Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, who created AfterBuzz TV, made a movie called The Adventures of Serial Buddies that was out in theaters a few months ago. It is now available on demand and on iTunes for $4.99 to rent and $5.99 to own. For many of you out there, we at AfterBuzz love giving you excellent free content. You know, over 60 shows a week, all about your favorite TV shows. And many people have asked, you know, what can we do to give back? And one way that you can give back to us and help support AfterBuzz and keep us going and keep us providing you with the same great free content is to check out this movie. It's a really funny movie. We've all seen it. Catherine, I believe your quote is on the box art.
Is it really? I haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah, it's a very, very funny movie featuring some very great cameos.
I mean, I haven't seen the box art, but I know the film. I saw the film. Yeah. I did see the film, but I didn't see the box art. I didn't realize
I reviewed it. I didn't watch it. I just reviewed it.
But it's a funny dark comedy. It's kind of like Dexter meets Dumb and Dumber. A lot of great celebrity cameos are in it. Christopher Lloyd's in it. Beth Bears from Two Broke Girls. Yeah. Maria's in it, of course. Kathy Lee Gifford is in it. Artie Lang.
Chris McDonald.
Christopher McDonald.
Who I just saw, by the way, on Broadway last week.
Oh, yeah?
It was fantastic.
Excellent.
Yeah.
In Lucky Guy with Tom Hanks. Go ahead.
Henry Winkler's in it, and there's also four great young comedians, two of which I know personally, who are so great in the movie. So if you love AfterBuzz and you want to support us, because we love giving this content to you, check out the movie at SerialBuddies.com, and it is available on demand and on iTunes.
Thank you. And speaking of buddies, we have, you know, well, before we get to Pete and Benson, we should talk about, you know, a little more about Peggy and Chaz, Joe. Like, so the romance seems to be on and popping, right? I mean, well, first of all, is there a romance
or is it just actually, because
is there a flirtation or is it a romance?
I think there's a thing that can happen. There's a dangerous place that any marriage can kind of float into, and I think Ted's has kind of slid into it, where you're connecting more with someone at work that shares your interest, that is moving in your same circle, and you're connecting more with that person, and that person is exciting you intellectually and as well as physically. And I think with Peggy, you know, she's a lovely lady, but she's not a bombshell, you know. And so I think with her, what she does,
speak for yourself.
Wait a minute, do not mention this next week.
I dare you.
I'm saying she's the girl next door. She's not Ginger. She's Marianne.
Sure, fair enough.
That's all I'm saying. Don't make a big production out of it.
Too late.
What I'm saying is that she intellectually stimulates Ted, and I think they get each other in
it's
a
like
way
me,
that
it's like me and you.
Exactly, just like me and you.
Sometimes at work,
and we cuddle, and you laugh too hard at my jokes.
I really enjoy working with you for long periods of time.
Don't tell Aaron. But I think that's kind of what's going on, and that drift in Ted's marriage is. I don't get the vibe that he's prepared to do anything else about it, but I think that that's drifting in that direction now, and that drift I think is taking it. I think it's catching him unaware almost, because I don't think I don't get the vibe that he's kind of like that guy, quote unquote.
Well,
and so
so you're telling me that, and I want to scroll down real quick because we're kind of crunched on time tonight, but you're telling me in your opinion that they have done nothing yet.
I don't think they have. No, I'm pretty sure
they've been to the movies together. Like it feels,
yeah, but they didn't. They didn't live together.
Okay,
but at the same time, you look at how when they were showing Don the ad, how he took Peggy by the waist. There was a touch there, a very intimate touch.
Well, I'm going out on a limb here. I think because it is real feelings there, I think there is kind of perhaps real love there that I don't think they have done anything.
Okay.
This is not betting. This is why I'm a little bit mad with Don, because he's assuming that.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually a little bit mad with Don's vindictiveness in this, because he's assuming that they're, you know, like he would do, just jump into bed with a colleague or whatever.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but I actually think there's perhaps real feelings between these two.
And there's a certain kind of energy that they kind of have that has that anticipation and that almost like high school. It feels almost high school-y, like it's there's a
giddiness.
Yeah. And I don't feel like it's gone there yet.
No,
I feel like
I'm sure it hasn't.
Okay, well that's fair enough. But the one thing I did forget to mention about Don is that, you know, he did break that whole thing up. But here's the thing about Don. He's almost always right. I think when he had that speech to Chaw about, like, you're embarrassing yourself. I mean, he's right. And he's very good. He's very good at jumping on that moral high horse when he's obviously like the most amoral guy on the planet.
Right.
But he's very good at like telling people, looking down his glasses, looking down his nose at folks, telling me, you know, you effed up. You're full of crap, when, you know, he is. But you know what? He's always right. And maybe he knows it so well because he's been there. He's that guy. But
yeah, he recognizes it.
I think he was right to Peggy. And when everything he said to Peggy was correct, everything he said to Chaw was correct. I think Peggy's emotions and feelings were probably right, but I mean, Don's not wrong here, which is kind of weird and ironic, obviously.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, go ahead. Peggy and Chaw.
I know we're crunched for time, but we had a lot moving on the Benson front this week.
Yes.
And I want to make sure that we give
Benson
it the time that
sure.
it deserves.
Let me just say this. In connection with Peggy and Chaw, and Chaw getting obviously clouded, his judgment being clouded by his feelings right now, and how much he and Peggy are personally gelling. He's losing the ability to find out whether or not her ideas would gel with the general populace, because he likes them so much and they seem to be vibing so much together. So they're very vibrating on the same frequency, and that's too much, which is what is screwing up his ability to reason whether or not she's going to be vibrating with the rest of the universe. And I just wanted to make sure we tossed that in there, right?
Okay.
Fair enough.
All right.
Benson, huh? Benson Watch. Okay, so we disbanded
Benson. Haven't we got a theme for that yet?
No, we don't, and we should. We disbanded Benson Watch a few weeks ago. Definitely premature. Last week, huge reveal. Benson came on to Pete. Very subtle way, but his feelings were deep. Or so they seemed. Now, Pete comes back in a big way. He kind of handled it gracefully last week, I thought. But this week, he's disgusted. He tells, you know, Bob that he's disgusting. He's a pervert. And that he doesn't want to, he wants to take Chevy from Ken, but he doesn't want to do it with Bob. He doesn't want to share a hotel room with him or anything like that. And Bob's definitely hurt by all this. But there was that great moment after the meeting where Pete comes out and he shakes his hand. And Bob, for a second, drops the facade and he, you know, like the predator eyes come on and he's like, you need to watch what you say to people. Mm. Congratulations on this guy. Wow.
That was the Bob Benson that you've been looking for all season. You were so, I mean, that was like.
That was the Bob Benson I've been looking at all season.
Okay.
Yeah. That was.
The real Bob Benson was revealed in that moment. It was very, very Primal Fear Ed Norton in that moment.
Exactly. Bob Benson, the say anything, do anything, social climber, you know, fraud, essentially. And we get that confirmed this week. Pete reaches out to Duck, and Duck digs into his history for $1,000. Nice job there, Duck.
That's a big payday in 1998.
Let's be real, dude. That's about 10 grand real money.
That's a nice payday. Nice payday. And we discover that Bob is not the finely schooled guy that many people think he is.
We got that clue
a few weeks ago, but he's very, very good at putting it on. Mm. And he spent 3 years at Brown and Harriman, his last job. At his last job, basically as a manservant to one of the executives, and everybody knew what was going on between the two of them.
Manservant.
Yes. So Pete takes in this information, and he's like, I've dealt with this before. You know, because back in season one, when he was fighting Don Draper, the fraud, and he lost big time, and he's been paying for it ever since. He's never had the level of zest or potential that he had in season one, when he was a villain, but, you know, he had the potential, he thought, you know, to be a big, big name in this company, and he is continually, you know, hammered away at by everybody else. However, he thinks about this Bob Benson situation. He goes in, we think he's going in for the kill to expose him, and instead, he makes a very wise move, and I believe it was the Joes who said this, like, right after the show ended. It was like, that toke of pot really, really has adjusted Pete in some very very nice way. Mellowed him out. He realizes, I'm not going to fight you on this because I know that I'm afraid of what you would do with a day head start. I would lose because you are dangerous.
Absolutely.
And people sitting in front of their televisions around the country said, thank you, because we knew that all along.
Well, let me say this. You know, it's not just that Pete has learned that a guy like Don or a guy like that we've just found out, Bob, can bite you. They can also help you.
Yes.
I mean, Don covered Pete's stake in the company when Pete couldn't come up with the influx of cash they needed. Was it 25K that everybody was up for? And Pete didn't have it. And that would have been the end of him. And Don covered him. So, I mean, you know, he's learned that, hey, you can get hit by me or you can get help by me. One or the other.
I've been sticking to my thing all. My new thing is, and I've been sticking to this all season long, is that the biggest evolution to me is Pete Campbell. I've been saying that he's a guy who is a complete turnaround. I think that
and somehow we feel so bad for him, and I hated him in season one.
We hated him. But look, everything about this season was like, oh, Pete's really changing from the Martin Luther King episode to all these other cues. But here was the ultimate thing. It's like you think Pete Campbell's going to go ballistic. He has all the information. He's like, this is my big chance. And he goes, you know what? I've been down this road. I fought this guy like you for freaking 7 years. You know, 8 years of fighting a guy just like you. I've learned, like, I'm going to be aligned myself with you. Like, I've learned. And Pete is evolving.
Yeah.
Pete's evolving to a different guy.
I also think it's a power play. I mean, if you know something about someone.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was a complete power play on Peter's. I mean, the way he felt so sort of.
So you don't think Pete's evolving?
No, I think, you know, that how he knew also knows about, you know, Don's part. I mean, I think it's this episode was a lot about the fact that people knew, you know, secrets about other people and that. And, I mean, it's how you interpret it. And, I mean, Pete realized that if he knows a secret about Bob Benson, he can use it to his advantage because Bob doesn't want to be revealed.
Right.
So it gives him a sense of power. So I think that was the move, not like I'm going to play along, I've cooled down, I'm going to play along. It was far more I'm getting my power
back. But here's the thing. That power is gone that power is gone when you reveal to the person, I know what you're doing, but I'm not going to tell anybody.
No, because you've got power within the rest of the group. Because you're the only one that knows.
Because you're an ally.
Yeah, no, because you're the only one that knows about that person. So that means that that person always knows that you know.
Right.
So when you're in the group, mm-hmm. there's always that play.
Fair.
Because Bob Benson will now know that Pete right. has that over him.
Right. And then just one more thing. There were layers to the way that Pete laid this out. And it was the line, I am off limits.
I am off limits.
It's not just saying I am off limits for what you do to other people in this company, but it was also his way of effectively putting the feelings, if there were any,
right.
to bed.
And he said, and he's like, you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
He said it, you know. And get Manolo off my...
I don't think Manolo likes women. I think you're confused on that.
Right.
But, you know, it was interesting to me in that conversation. Pete did not hesitate on the phone with Duck. I got the vibe anyway that he'd been thinking, that he thought long and hard about Don when that whole situation came up. And he went back over the whole scene as and figured out, what did I do wrong and what should I have done? Because it's not like he took that information from Duck and went, oh gosh, I need 3 days to figure out a strategy. He went on the phone with Duck. He goes, I've dealt with people like this before. I know what to do.
Yeah, because he's living it for 8 years.
Yeah, well, that's
he
what I'm saying.
About it
so
every
he's,
step of the way.
He's already thought this through.
Right.
That was interesting to me that he's given enough thought to this that he's already prepared to move.
Pete's evolving, man. Pete's going to be the guy. He'll be bald, but he'll be the guy.
Yeah. I just want to say this: how much we love marijuana on this show. One hit of a joint, and you change that dramatically.
Well, no,
that is our belief.
I had said that he changed before that.
Yes,
I think the marijuana was a signifier of he is changing.
Of how much he has.
That, symbol.
That,
absolutely.
That,
we should talk
clearly
catches.
Being sarcastic.
Yeah. Well, this really quickly. We should touch barely like for 30 seconds. Touch on Sally. Sally Borden School. You know. Talked about
yeah.
it, but I, you know, Sally Borden School, very scary, interesting situation. We talked about the fact that she was there in a very Heather's sort of mean girl situation with those young girls.
She totally turned around because,
right.
Which was scary when she came in and those girls were sort of like, oh my God, they're going to really have a power. And I presume they're a little bit older than her,
yeah.
But she totally turned it around. Like she had the connections, she knew how to get the booze, the smokes.
She did.
She started a fight. Two boys fought over her, and the girls thought she was so cool.
But this is such a result of the two parents that she has.
Right.
She has learnt so well to be an adult so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think also this is the thing that I took away from that was that it's just the usual thing of the parents think they're doing the right thing by sending their kids off to boarding school. Little do they know what kind of shit goes on at boarding school.
I'm telling you.
I know Jackie Onassis went there.
Was Mrs.
And
Porter's,
Gloria
by the
Vanderbilt
way.
Gloria Vanderbilt. But like, yeah, all kind of shit's going down in boarding school. So that's
badass movers and shakers don't develop themselves into badass movers and shakers 10 minutes after they get out of boarding school. They develop that stuff in private school. And
sure.
I went to private school for years, and I was like, when I went to public school, I was like, you guys are all really nice.
Yes.
You guys are all really innocent. You should see the shit that goes on over at St. So-and-so's. It's bananas.
I agree.
Yeah.
So let's get to our catches of the week. So before we get out of here, as we know, superfan Mike August comes to us every week with catches. As you know, for the last 12 episodes, we watch a show directly after we do the show directly after we watch it. We don't have time to catch everything. Mike August does that work for us. He's got his catches from last week's episode of Favors. So a couple things he said that he talks about. Well, the first thing, you know, and this is in out of order, but he mentions that it's a coincidence that George W. Bush enlisted for the Texas National Air Guard the same year of 1968 as the Rosen Boy did, which I think was very interesting. That's also a great catch. Also, he mentions that the show could be setting the table for Bob Benson to be involved in the Stonewall riots in Greenwich Village, which happened in 1969. I was just there in Greenwich Village seeing that very site. It's a very, very historic moment, super important moment in gay liberation movement. And so I wonder if they'll touch on that next season.
That'll be next season, because I don't think we're going to get into 69.
No, but it could be a foreshadowing there. And they also talked about there's more references to war, with Peggy had the battle with the rat in her apartment. She later seen with a cat in the alley with a rodent against it.
The cat.
She's in the cat in the alley against future rodent intruders. It appears that she'll be staying for a little longer. Shares a trait with the rat in that she can only survive in these harsh environments. Hers being the office populated by the corporate ladder-climbing men, meaning she's always in a battle. So that could there's some definitely parallels between the wars going on, you know, in real life in 68 and the wars going on in Peggy's life in the office. So those are the three Mike August catches, which we think are all very, very astute.
The cat makes me sad.
The cat makes me sad. I also want to very quickly thank you for all for listening to us on iTunes. Thank you for joining us on iTunes and listening. Thank you for all your comments, and we appreciate them all. We read them all. Please continue to comment and rate us. We love you for listening. Thank you very much.
Yes.
We also love Five.
And Joe says we love Five. So thank you. Please continue to do that. And last, I should also say that we have a brand new and improved website here on AfterBuzzTV.com. You should check it out. The fans have demanded it. We've given it to them. There's some really cool updates. So please, please, please check it out. AfterBuzzTV.com. Another way to watch us there, along with iTunes and along with YouTube. So that's what we have there. So now, well, let's jump into very quickly news, because our news is
AfterBuzz TV News.
We have a big, big week next week.
It's big.
Yes.
It's big.
Yes.
It's huge.
Really big.
So this is our last show. This penultimate episode is our last show in the studio, because next week we will be live at John Lovitz Comedy Club.
Wow.
Doing a live finale with the cast of Mad Men, cast and creators and writers from Mad Men alongside of us. Yeah. We will all watch this show together with you. You guys can come join us down the John Lovitz Comedy Club for a very low price, about $15.
Which, if you go to johnlovitzcomedyclub.com and put it in the coupon code ABTV, you will get $5 off your ticket purchase.
Boom, $10. It's worth just to see Joe Sanfilippo in person.
I am that fantastic. If you guys, seriously, if you're Mad Men fans and you are in the LA area, this is the best thing you can do next Sunday. You are going to have all kinds of people from the show. We can't even tell you how huge they are.
They're big.
It's a small theater. They'll be right there, and you get to watch the episode with us, and then there'll be Q&A afterwards, and it's going to be fantastic.
And we can't say who's all going to be there, but. A lot of people.
Could possibly be your favorite character, yes. So you have to be there.
But we can't say the big man himself will be there.
Yeah, we are beyond excited. Yeah.
So that's what we'll say for that. So thank you, and hopefully we'll see you next week. Other than that, let's get into predictions.
Predictions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
What do you got for me, Joe Sanfilippo?
I sense some more trouble on the horizon with Peggy and Don. I don't know. I don't know that Peggy's going to quit. I don't think it's going to go that way. But there's going to be some fireworks between them, because he's really pissed on her chips. I mean, that's a really rough thing he did today, in every way for her. And that cat from last season, from last week. I'm sorry. That cat also. I mean, not only is the cat a mouser and he's there to help, but it's also women who don't have husbands and children tend to have cats. I mean, there is a symbol. I know,
you
but that's a symbol.
Every time.
It's not sexist. It's a symbol. It's a symbol.
All right.
I'm telling you, can go either way. And if her love interest is a married man, and Don has shut that down, so I'm thinking there's some hostility between them. I think there's going to be some stuff go down between.
Why
them.
Why don't you go work at 1960 era Sterling?
We are in the 1960s.
All right. Catherine, predictions?
The cat will be fine. I don't think the cat will prohibit Peggy from relationships. But anyway, I think the Sally thing could be interesting. Obviously not in this season, but I'm wondering if we are going to see Sally in a boarding school. That means that kind of sets up a whole new parameter of scenes and interactions with Sally.
And so, dread.
Yeah, so that could be an interesting storyline. I don't think we'll see it this season, but I'd be quite curious to see Sally's life in a boarding school.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we haven't gotten a significant Megan and Don development all season, really. So I think something's got to blow up there next week, something significant. And I'm wondering if she finds out about the affair, is there divorce talk? I think we're going to see some fireworks on that front next week.
And Matthew Weiner did dispel the rumors, the Sharon Tate rumors. So we know that. He said no one dies, which we thought Cosgrove died, but he did not die. So no one dies.
Yeah.
Next week. I have no idea what to happen, but I do like in the previews they showed us nothing from next week, which I'm very
less than nothing.
So I'm very, very excited. I've got nothing. I don't have a prediction. I just want
to see. Look at a bunch of clips from old episodes. All right, moving on.
Yeah, very, very well cut, mysterious clips. Joe Filippo, where can we find you?
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Filippo, JoeFlippo. You can also find me here with Joe Braz covering Hannibal on Thursday nights, and we have our big finale this week. Mm-hmm. And you can also find me in Escape from Planet Earth. Go ahead and check that movie out. It's really cool, and it's out on DVD now.
Okay. Yep.
What are you in that?
Oh, I'm one of the bad blue dudes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like in real life. Catherine, where can we find you?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter at my name, Catherine Tulich, T-U-L-I-C-H. I'm also in the LA Times. You can read me there, and also on RogerEbert.com.
Yes,
which is way cooler than being a bad blue dude.
Matt Lieberman, where can we find you?
All right, you can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. You can also find me here on AfterBuzz TV on Defiance and a few other shows this summer, potentially after the dome or Under the Dome and Low Winter Sun later in the summer. And you can find me, if you live in L.A. and you like live comedy, I perform at the IO West Comedy Theater the first Sunday of every month as a member of DJ Fawcett, ioimprov.com/west.
Nice. And I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. And also here with Hannibal with Joe Flippo, as you mentioned. Big finale week this week. We have a lot of very special guests coming in this week to commemorate the finale of Hannibal. So please, all you Hannibal people, listen to that. Also, you can find me on Grantland.com, ESPN's Grantland.com. I have a few mini documentaries coming out. And that's it. Extra in here, and I love you all. We'll see you next week at John Lovitz Comedy Club.
Woo!
See you there.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.